My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball. He's a former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He is also the author of numerous articles and books. His most recent book is The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. We want to get his thoughts today as the People's Climate March plays out in New York City, all in conjunction with the opening of the United Nations General Assembly and the United States continuing to put climate change at the top of its list of threats to the planet. And Dr. Ball, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Greg.
Secretary Kerry has made it very consistent, whether he's speaking in Indonesia or Hawaii or different parts of the United States, that this is at the top of the diplomatic agenda for the Obama administration. He's quoted just in the last couple of days as saying, "While we are confronting ISIS and we are confronting terrorism and we are confronting Ebola, this also has an immediacy that people have come to understand. There's a long list of important issues before all of us, but the grave threat that climate change poses warrants a prominent position on that list." What do you make of his prioritization of concerns?
Well, of course, it's completely wrong, but it fits the political agenda. And the political agenda, of course, is that you have to have an issue that transcends national boundaries. And the global warming issue was chosen for that reason, that the argument is that no one nation can deal with it, therefore the United Nations has got to deal with it, and therefore they are pushing it. The issue of climate change, of course, or global warming, as it technically is failing. People are starting to see through it. People are starting to ask questions. But more important, the moral high ground that Kerry, of course, is trying to claim by saying, well, we're saving the planet. And that goes back to H.L. Mencken's comment that the urge to save the planet is almost always a false front for the urge to rule. But the moral high ground that these people took with that has been undercut, particularly by the Indian government. The Prime Minister of India ordered a commission to look into it. And they basically came out and said, look, even if you're very narrow possibility of a half a degree temperature rise over 50 to 100 years is true, we don't think it is, we've got greater priorities. We've got people starving to death. We've got people that are unemployed. And suddenly that shifted the moral high ground, which is very significant. The other thing is that there's a challenge to the control of the IMF, which is the agency that these people want to take the carbon tax, collect the carbon tax for them. When the emails were leaked from East Anglia back in 2009, it was done deliberately to undermine the Copenhagen 2009 conference, at which conference they were going to implement the global carbon tax and have the money collected by the IMF. The challenge to the IMF, of course, is coming from many nations, particularly the BRICS nations, B-R-I-C-S, that is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, which represents 48% of the world population, and by the way, 106 countries in the UN. They want to, they've set up already a loan fund to counter the IMF. So they're losing every which way on this issue, and that's why when these leaders, such as India, said, no, we're not going to New York, we're not going to be part of your silly game, the only choice they had left was to go to star power, appeal to celebrities. And this is why they appointed Leonardo DiCaprio an ambassador of peace. Well, what has global warming got to do with peace? ISIS is about peace, but global warming isn't. And, of course, they also gave the IPCC, the official UN panel that supposedly claimed global warming is a problem, and Al Gore, the great promoter of it, he got the Nobel Peace Prize, as did they. Again, it had nothing to do with peace. But this is all part of the politics of what's going on with the marching and what's going on in New York.
Perhaps a counter to what you just said there, Dr. Ball, from the Obama administration or others on that side of the issue, and they've said this, and I'm sure you've seen this, is that they believe the unrest in Syria, the original civil war, is due to a diminishing of resources brought on by climate change. What do you make of that, whether it's in Syria or other parts of the world?
Well, of course, the use of the switch from global warming to climate change was very significant, because what happened was they said if CO2 increases, and it will because of human activity, the global temperature is certain to rise. Well, the CO2 level's gone up and the temperature didn't go up for 19 years now. So instead of going back to the science and saying our science was wrong, they said that they simply moved the goalpost, changed the headline from global warming to climate change. To argue, as is implied in that comment about Syria, that climate change is somehow something new, it is nonsense. I mean, saying that climate change is like saying that women have babies. They tell me something I don't know. And, of course, what the public don't know, and they're aware of this, is how much the climate changes and how quickly it changes over time. And the whole history of humanity is adaptation to changing climate. Now, I'd love to know what they're specifying as the climate change that has caused Syrian economy to suffer. Because why, if that's true in Syria, why isn't it true in other countries around there? I mean, these are just specious, alarmist arguments that are absolute nonsense.
Dr. Ball, let's talk a little bit about some of the most recent hard data that's come out, because a lot of folks have been talking about that over the summer. There's been some reports talking about the amount of ice at the North Pole being significantly greater than it was just a few years ago. There's been others talking about the fact that we haven't actually seen a temperature increase in the average temperature since the latter part of last century. What's the most important data that's come out recently, and what does it do to the debate?
Well, all of this is the evidence that should have been sought out by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. You see, what they did was they created a hypothesis, which I just talked about, increased CO2 from humans will cause global warming. But normally what would happen is that other scientists, acting as skeptics, would challenge that and say, no, where's your evidence? The evidence shows opposite. But as Richard Lindzen said about that hypothesis, which is generally referred to as the anthropogenic global warming hypothesis, the consensus was reached before the research had even begun. So what's been happening in the interim, and they brought that idea in 1990, is gradually evidence has come forward. They've tried to change it. They've tried to obliterate it. For example, the argument that today is the warmest ever, and then we said, no, it was warmer 1,000 years ago, or the medieval warm period. Well, we'll have to get rid of that, and they produced the hockey stick. So if the evidence as it came forward, they either tried to change it or ignore it. But the evidence keeps coming forward, and at some point, the public are starting to realize, and the Arctic ice is precisely that. I mean, it was just 5 years ago that NASA and Al Gore were both saying there will be no summer ice in the Arctic in 2013, and it's turned out to be absolutely wrong. In fact, there's more ice than there was 2 years ago, and the same with Antarctica. So this evidence, each piece of it cumulatively, and every single bit of it contradicts their hypothesis, and that's what's going on. So, in other words, they've dragged out the proper climate or proper scientific process. They've dragged it out by playing politics with it, but the evidence is catching up with them.
Dr. Ball, last question. Obviously, we've seen this administration try to push things through Congress. They couldn't do it even when Democrats controlled both chambers by pretty wide majorities. Now we've seen reports that this is another thing that could happen either through executive order or through just making some sort of agreement on an international scale and saying it's an amendment to previous treaties that will not require Senate ratification. Without getting too much into the weeds of how the American political system works, what do you make of the fact that they're no longer going through the legislative route to make this stuff happen?
Well, of course, the key to how they get things to function is the bureaucracies. And it's no accident that Maurice Strong, who was the guy behind the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, set it up through the World Meteorological Organization. They right now are that's the World Meteorological Organization is made up by the weather office bureaucrats in every country in the world, and they, by the one, have also got a series of 1-minute videos they're putting out across the world saying, you know, for example, the first one says, here's a weather forecast for the year 2050. It's absolutely outrageous. But in the U.S., of course, the problem is the founding fathers set up checks and balances to prevent abuse of any one group taking control. But the whole Obama administration's goal has been to end run that process. And they've been doing it through the bureaucracies, by the EPA, for example. And one of the things a lot of people don't understand in the U.S., the EPA and other function under administrative law. And that's very different. That's why they were able to win the Supreme Court case, that they have absolute control over CO2. And so what's going on here is a political agenda that uses bureaucracies to achieve the goal. And, of course, the bureaucracies are not accountable really to anybody, as Americans are finding out through the IRS and all these other things. And of course, the ultimate control of bureaucracies is in the funding, and hopefully the Congress will get the power and the sense to cut off the funding to the UN, cut off the funding to the EPA. In Canada, for example, Prime Minister Harper has cut dramatically the funding to Environment Canada, who were the major agency pushing this global warming issue. So that's what's going on here. And it's as Mary McCarthy said years ago, bureaucracy, the rule of nobody, the modern form of despotism, and that's precisely what's happening.
And very quickly, we talked about the data that's not going in the direction of the administration and other global warming proponents. On a recent visit with us, you said you believe that we're in a cooling period that'll probably last till about 2040, so it doesn't sound like the data is going to get much better for their case anytime soon.
Well, no, that's the difficulty. And of course, the problem is, as always with these things, when governments screw up, everybody suffers, but everybody pays. There's no accountability. And these people at the IPCC should be held accountable. These people that are saying, oh, yeah, this is the problem and that's the problem, they're never held to account. And that's the real frustration with the public nowadays, is that these people just throw a bomb in the room and walk away. And I just wrote an article about that on What's Up With That, about, Oliver Wendell Holmes said, you can shout fire in a crowded theater, but not if it's false. And, of course, the claims that they've made have been proven false, and therefore they should be held accountable. There's a responsibility that goes with free speech. And that is a real concern of where we're going now, and frustration for the public as well.
Dr. Ball, we'll hold it there. Thanks, as always, for your expertise. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Greg. Hopefully we can bring common sense to the world, although it isn't very common.
Dr. Tim Ball is a former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg, the author of many articles and books. The latest book is The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.